It's good to be with you guys. Small crowd, but it's nice. It means we just get to be a bit chill. We've got some exciting connection essentials that we're going to talk about this evening. And I, by proxy of Catherine, have 4 points that I want to talk to you guys about as we talk about emotions and feelings. So my first point, I think I can tell you the 4 points, actually. Authentic self-awareness. All right, here's our 4 points. Control your stink. You're not Spock. Don't be a sandwich. And Jesus, take the wheel. You can tell that my wife wrote this. So let's talk about controlling your stink. There was a conference, it must have been last year, that we had in this church, where one of Catherine's favorite preachers came and was preaching. She's, a personal hero of ours, and we had the pleasure of getting to spend a bit of time with her throughout the week that she was here. And the last night that she was here, the last night of the conference, we were praying for people, and it was a really powerful, amazing time. But as we were praying for people, it went for a little bit, and people were getting hot and sweaty. And there was someone in particular that Catherine prayed for, and she gave this big man a big hug. And afterwards, she smelt like a big man because this man was quite sweaty at the time. And she did not realize that she smelt like this man as we went and hugged farewell our hero, Wendy Backlund. And we hopped into the car, and Catherine was like, "Oh, no. Oh, no, I smell like this individual because I hugged them and I just hugged Wendy. Oh, no." And she was just absolutely mortified. So we're talking about controlling your stink because emotional intelligence in powerful relationships is kind of like body odor. The less you work on it, the less you're aware of it, the more it will impact others. And we all get a little bit stinky at times, but on the whole, it would be great if we could notice when we're stinky or the times we're likely to get stinky and take appropriate action. Noticing our emotions. And it's actually our job to notice when we're having an emotion, to notice when we're having a feeling. It's not the job of the people around us. It's our job to be aware of when we're stinky or may get stinky. And as we grow in our ability to do this, we become more mature and more like ourselves. Self-awareness is really the foundation to being authentic and safe in our relationships. Something we talked about last week is that we really can only control ourselves. Controlling others is not what we want to do. And it's not effective at all. We can only control ourselves. And so when it comes to knowing our feelings, we want to be controlling ourselves and being able to communicate those. The cultural normal in Australia, I've spent probably about just under a third of my life I've lived in America. And so I've had some exposure to some different cultures and got to witness the absurdity of Australian culture, which I love dearly, but like there's some things that we do. I mean, there's some things that every culture does. But one of the cultural normals that we have as Australians is that feelings and emotions are the highest truth. And that's not something that most people would say. And what I mean by the highest truth is that they are more true than anything else. We begin and end relationships based on these feelings, like I'm not in love with you anymore. We make decisions based on them. It just doesn't feel right. I don't feel like it. And emotions are so powerful that we also have thoughts and assumptions that masquerade as feelings, like I feel like you're leaving me out. But my job is to understand what's happening inside of me. And it's my job to then communicate that. We're going to go into greater depth on this on another day, but today we're focusing on tuning into our emotions. So here's point two. You are not Spock. I don't know how many of you understand this reference, but Spock is a character that is without emotions. that is just purely logical. As far as I'm aware, I've never watched Star Trek. Neither has Catherine, so I don't know why this ended up being the reference, but good to know. But emotions are actually logical. No one is unemotional, but emotions are logical. Things like, I'm scared because that dude is scary. That is logical. Thought and emotion, though, they're so intertwined that they can't be separated. Thoughts and emotions are logical. Lacking emotional literacy is more often the problem than people not actually having emotions. No one is Spock. No one doesn't have emotions. If you have a brain, you have thoughts. And if you have thoughts, you have emotions because they're so intertwined. The problem is that some people just aren't aware of them or they're unable to identify them and so think that they don't have them, but everyone has them. We just get to work on our emotional intelligence or our EQ. We get to learn on, grow in our self-awareness. As Australians, we are a funny bunch. We swim in oceans with things that can kill us. We bushwalk surrounded by things that could kill us. We like to tell tourists about drop bears and scare them about the wildlife. We had an American visit just before COVID kicked off, and he was really terrified to come to our country, actually. I think he had to seriously consider it because he'd heard so many stories from Australians boasting about how dangerous our country is that it made him hesitant. So we laugh about these scary things, but gosh, can we be afraid of our own feelings? Catherine and I both counsel and speak with people from many walks of life, and it seems to us that as Australians, we've kind of created this default emotional setting for ourselves, where we've decided that anger is the best emotion because it's powerful. Anger feels powerful, and often when we're feeling powerless, we want to feel powerful, so anger is the easiest emotion to go to. However, usually fear, anxiety, grief, disappointment, and many other emotions and feelings are actually what is stirring up the anger. The classic she'll be right mentality, where we bury our concerns and hopes in fear of disappointment, is the other way that Australians often tend to go, which sometimes feels like it works out well until it happens in relationships and we're just burying things. What we've noticed is that your feelings, much like pain, they don't go away. Like you can't just bury feelings. You can't just bury pain. It's like filling up a trash, what are they called? Trash can? Trash. Goodness. My Americanisms and my Australians just combined and my brain exploded. Garbage can. All right. A rubbish bin. It's like filling up a rubbish bin and it gets to the point where it just overflows. You can't bury it down. It doesn't go anywhere. It's still in the rubbish bin. And at some point, it overflows and makes a mess on the people around you. But we get to identify what we're feeling and explain it to the people around us. We get to communicate what's going on inside of us rather than just blowing up. When we don't communicate feelings, things get confusing and messy. So Catherine's third point is don't be a sandwich. And it's like the traditional dad joke of, I feel like a sandwich. Well, you don't look like a sandwich. The pun is a play on words with the use of feeling, because often we communicate things in a really unclear way. We communicate what's going on inside of us in an unclear way, which just leads to confusion or at best a pun. Really, the person is communicating that they're hungry and that they would like to do something about it, but they're being unclear. So by don't be a sandwich, we mean choose to grow in your ability to communicate what's actually happening for you. And the beautiful thing is we can really break emotions down to four main basic emotions, which is sad, mad, glad, and EGAD. EGAD is fear or surprise, that's EGAD. It's kind of an old English word, but I like it. So sad, mad, glad, or EGAD. And the fact that those are the four basic emotions, means that it makes it a lot easier to identify. We don't have to go off into the woods and spend a week trying to figure out what we feel. It's probably one of those four. We have a wheel that we have printed off. Chris will print it out. She has printed it out. Chris will hand it out. So this is a really wonderful tool. The fact is, we've talked about how we learn our communication styles from our parents. We actually learn our ability to perceive emotions from our family, which also means like our code book is part of that. Like if you are always hearing the communication of like, I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed. For you, you might not know when you're angry. You might just think, well, I'm just disappointed with this person, when really what's going on underneath is anger. So learning emotional literacy helps you communicate what's actually going on inside of you, and it helps you know what's actually going on inside of you. This is a really wonderful tool for identifying what's going on inside of you. So you can see that this tool has... could I have that one back, Zach? I just don't have it in front of me. Oh, I do have it in front of me. Never mind. Sorry. So you can see that on the outside, it's got what emotions feel like in the body. So it's got these things like sweaty palms and jumpy and breathless. And then as it goes in, it kind of goes towards the emotion that might be contributing to that. So maybe if you've got sweaty palms, you're experiencing shock, or maybe you're experiencing scared, which is at its basic level surprise. So this is a really wonderful tool for figuring out how you feel, because you can either work from the outside in or the inside out. And your code books is also going to determine somewhat how that presents in your body. There is chocolate. So growing in our ability to identify how we are feeling and reacting to things not only enables us to live more authentic and present lives, it also helps us to hold connection with other people. How can I explain what's happening inside of me if I don't know? Okay, so I'm going to hand over to Chris. I just want, as Chris comes up, just have a think and maybe share with someone around you. What do you know an emotion that you feel a certain sensation in your body with? Like, for example, I tend to know I'm stressed if my jaw is hurting, because it means that I've been clenching my jaw, and then I'll be able to be like, I must be stressed about something. So do you have a sensation that you can notice in your body and be like, that's tied to that feeling? So just have a think about that and chat with someone next to you as Chris comes up.
It's interesting, isn't it, that we actually can kind of use what's happening in our body to diagnose. The other thing for me is if I've got intrusive thoughts that just keep coming, you know, kind of interrupting me round and round and round, sometimes when I'm trying to sleep, but sometimes it's just through the day when I keep thinking about the same situation and I can't stop those thoughts intruding, for me that's anxiety, and I know that I have to do something about that. So, yeah, it's just kind of, it's again, it's awareness. It's what's happening in my body. I tense my shoulders sometimes. I kind of get that really tense feeling across my shoulders because I'm anxious. Yeah. So it's just a really good clue to think, well, what's happening? What's happening in my body? Okay, one of the things I wanted to do is just talk about some ways we can communicate, once we've worked out what's going on inside us, how we can actually begin to communicate that. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about how this whole process works. And because I'm a drawer, I'm going to draw it up. Well, most of it's drawn already, but you've got this drawing on the back of your sheet. So hopefully you can follow with what I'm about to do. But the first thing I thought would be just to ask us again a question for us to have a quick chat about is, what are some of the most common disappointments or frustrations that we experience in relationships? I'm not asking you to talk about your own personal relationship. Don't worry, you don't have to put all your dirty linen on the table, as they say. But just, you know, as you think about relationships generally, what do people get frustrated or disappointed about in their relationships? So I'll give us a minute to think about that. All right, so what are some of the things that we thought? I'm going to draw from up the back too, because you guys are having a great discussion. What are some of the common disappointments or frustrations? Yeah, so people interpreting your actions in a way that isn't like your heart, or, yeah, because of code book things. Yeah, so they're just judging or interpreting from their perspective, not really understanding where you're coming from. Yeah. Yeah, yep. Sort of uneven expectations, yep. And uneven levels of communication, I would say, as well, because, you know, we might have one person who wants to be really forthcoming with their conversation and somebody else who just doesn't talk or rarely talks about how they're feeling or whatever. Yeah. So all those things can kind of feel like it becomes a struggle or a disappointment. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to kind of outline a process that we can to help us sort of see how it all fits together. And the first thing I'm going to do is just with this picture, I'm just explain, here are two people who are wanting to have a heart connection. Just so hopefully you've got those two hearts in your drawing. So I've just represented it like that, two people wanting to have a heart connection. And you'll notice that both of the hearts are a bit broken, not complete. And that's because all of us have wounds, we have past experiences, we have traumas, we have stuff that's gone on in our lives that have actually damaged our hearts, damaged our trust maybe, made it difficult for us to really trust that we can connect deeply with people. We might be a bit wary of being disappointed or let down yet again. So that's why I've drawn them with some gaps in them. What I want to suggest is just to look at a few ways that we can kind of picture this process of communication. And the first thing that I want to suggest is that the first thing we need to do, which is what Jim talked about, is we need to understand, recognise, own and name the emotions, the feelings and the needs that we have, which is why I've put this down as number one right there in your heart. If we don't know what's going on in our hearts, it's really hard to communicate that with somebody else. So having the ability to name it, I feel really lonely. I feel really distressed. I feel really abandoned. I feel, you know, any of those words on the emotion wheel will help you get some language around what you're actually feeling, what we're actually feeling. So name the emotion. I'll just call it that on your... because that really is the first step that will help us to have that heart connection. The second thing that we need to do, having realised, yeah, I'm really feeling strongly about this, is we need to choose a communication style. And we talked about communication styles last week, and we said there's four main communication styles. The aggressive communication style is, I tell you exactly what I'm thinking, and we don't dial down our emotions. We often come out with accusation, with you always, you never, you... We've all done that, I'm sure. That accusing, aggressive, I dominate with what I'm saying and I'm feeling, and I don't give you space to really respond or tell me what's going on in your world. So aggressive... passive, avoidant, we often do this one. That's just like, oh, I won't make a fuss. I'll just stuff it down, a bit like Jim was saying. I'll put it in the rubbish bin and hope it doesn't overflow. But it always does. If we don't talk it out, we do act it out. And so somewhere along the line, there will be an explosion. I remember I've had, like a lot of Australian women, I think, I've had some challenging aspects of my relationship with my mother. I don't know many Australian women who don't have challenging aspects of their relationships with their mothers. And in my early 30s, I remember there was a lot of stuffing down. A very good friend of mine said to me, "Chris, it takes more energy to keep that stuff on the back burner than it does to take it out and look at it," which I was really grateful for. It was great advice, and I ended up going and getting some counselling and working through a lot of stuff because it was true. It took more energy to keep the lid on it or to try to keep the lid on it than it did to actually get it out and have a look at it and say, this is what it is and I need to face it and I need to deal with it. So passive avoidant is not a healthy communication style. Neither is the passive aggressive one that says, you know, I will hide my thoughts and feelings, but I'll punish you. I'll give you the silent treatment, or I'll, you know, I will make my displeasure known to you in some other way, even though I haven't actually told you what's going on in me. And this powerful one where we take responsibility to say, it's my job to discover and name and do something with the things that I'm feeling. So that's the second thing. We need to make an active choice about what communication style we're going to use. And obviously we're encouraging powerful communication. So I've drawn it this way because it's actually taking what's out and putting it out there on the table. I've called this the table of connection. I'm getting this information out of my heart, I've put this barrier here because otherwise, like, people can't see what's going on inside us. They're not mind readers and heart readers. So there's actually a barrier. And unless we intentionally choose to get the information out of us and put it on the table, then the other person actually has no idea what's going on inside of us except the little cues we give them that we're not happy, Jan. So this one, called this number 3. And there's a really useful tool for doing this in a healthy way, and we call it an I statement. And an I statement is useful because it's getting the information out, but without doing accusation or negativity or pointing the finger or judging the other person. Now, here is the basic bones of an I statement. It looks like this. It's a tool that helps us get the emotion out on the table in a healthy way. When you do X, Y, Z, I feel, so then we get to put the emotion out there on the table, and I need to feel, says what we need. So can we, so it's proposing a solution or a way forward. I think I've put that on your sheets. Is it there on the bottom of your sheets, the I statement? Here's some examples. Thanks, Zach. Here we go. When you speak over the top of me, I feel hurt and unvalued and I need to feel heard. So can we practice respectful communication? When you don't tell me what's happening inside you, I feel afraid and alone. And I need to feel connected. So can we have catch-up time each week and both share our hearts rather than just the one person? So that's an example of how you might use an I statement to communicate what's going on in your heart. Now, it always feels clunky to start with because it's stuff we haven't used or we're not as familiar with. But the more we use it, the better we get at it. So I'm going to give you a little bit of practice. Here's some examples where we can... Yep, try these, or you can try for something from your own example. When you don't when you don't help with the dishes, or when you don't stick to the budget we've agreed on, when you spend hours playing your game... All right, so just practice a theoretical one. with the other person. How might you feel? What might you need? And what might be a way forward? All right, I'll give you a couple of minutes to have a little think about that. We'll leave that up so you can see it and have a little practice. One of the things I notice, and I do it as well, and so it's really easy to say when when you don't help with the dishes, I feel like you don't care. But that's actually not our emotion. When we put the like in there, we're actually kind of pointing the finger to someone else again, and we're actually not using the diagnosis of what it causes us to feel. So if you find yourself saying, I feel like, you take the like out. Take the like out and go back and say, how do I actually feel? How does this situation make me feel? Russ gave me permission to use this example. He just said, a friend of his said to a partner, when you don't look after your appearance, and you started by saying, I feel like you don't care. But that's the pointing the finger at the other person again. So we went back and we dug a bit deeper. When you don't look after your appearance, we got to, I feel irritated. See how it kind of forces us to go beyond the, I feel like something about you, to actually getting to the core of, this is how I feel. Because that's actually what we need to identify to get real communication happening. I feel... And it is risky because we are essentially taking down a bit of this wall to let ourselves be seen, to let our hearts be seen. But that's the nature of intimacy. Intimacy is into me see. And the more wall we have up, the less connected our relationships are. The wall we put up to protect ourselves is the same wall that keeps out other people's love and connection. We cannot live self-protective lives and have deep connections, because that wall will keep out the very love and connection we're looking for. So we actually have to take the risk and put our emotion vulnerably on the table. And it's scary because we don't know what the other person is going to do with that information. We've given them good information about what's going on in us, but we don't know whether they're going to care for that information or not. So you can put a little I in there if you like, because that's the information that we've put on the table. The last couple of steps are to kind of look at this from the other direction, because we also want to be people who can receive good information when somebody's sharing it with us. And so I've called this step four, which is what's kind of like what, whoops, that's not a four. What's a healthy way to respond when somebody gives us that good information? And essentially, it's what we do back to them. And I want to suggest that the most healthy and helpful thing we can do when we receive feedback, and this is such a big deal when it comes to connection, is we can listen well and we can adjust. When somebody shares something vulnerably about what's going on in them, and we listen and we adjust our behaviour to build the connection that we have, what we have done is just made a safe place for them, and we have strengthened our connection amazingly. Now, Zach talked about feedback last week and some of the things that we do to try and not to have to adjust. Sometimes we defend ourselves. Sometimes we attack the person back and say, well, I might leave my clothes on the floor, but you do X, Y, Z. So we put the blame back on that person, or we Sorry, did you want to say something, Russ? No? I thought you might have been. Or we attack them back, or we do something else to avoid having to adjust anything. Sometimes people do this whole thing, I'm such a bad person. You know, here's something else I'm doing wrong. And they go into the, that's actually just another way of avoiding having to change. So instead of doing the listen and adjust, we find all sorts of ways, if we're not careful, to avoid the sting of that information. But if we're willing to genuinely listen and adjust our behaviour, we can come up with some fantastic responses that will actually help build connection. Some of those might be thanking them for sharing and for the bravery of sharing. Some of it might be apologising. As a team leader, I get a lot of feedback, and I encourage it because I need it. It took me a long time to learn to open my mouth when somebody came with something seemingly negative. It's only seemingly negative. But to open my mouth, and the first thing for me to say is, thank you for sharing that. That took courage. But I practice doing that because I want to create a place where people can give me feedback, even if it's uncomfortable. So I often try and thank people. I can't say that I do it all the time. Often apologise. What about loving sacrifice? We actually move towards the person. We say, okay, well, let's do the dishes together. Or we make some kind of sacrifice. Or we might do a negotiation or a compromise or a creative solution. I was saying this morning that my niece and nephew-in-law, neither of them wanted to get up and change the baby's nappy. Because who wants to do that? So they used to do rock, scissors, paper. And whoever lost, they got to change the nappy. And it was their way of creative solution so that they weren't creating tension for each other because one person always had to do it. So often when you've hit a bit of a roadblock, there's a creative solution that you can work towards where both people are feeling heard, where there's an adjustment made, and that that the information that's shared is valid and valued. And the very last thing I want to just really talk about briefly is sometimes we share information, good information, we put it on the table, we're hoping that the other person will listen and adjust, and guess what? They don't. So then we have to manage our disappointment and our feelings of frustration and our unmet needs. So here's just a couple of thoughts I have about how we can do that, because all relationships are disappointing. There's no such thing as a relationship that's not disappointing. And if you've got one, I don't know. I've never met somebody who hasn't got some disappointment in their relationships. Even the very best relationship is disappointing at some level. So, thanks, Zach. Here's some things to think about. Sometimes people have really unrealistic expectations. When I was first married, I thought if my husband was not at work, he needed to be with me. So when he went off bike riding with his mates, I would get upset. Why? Because my expectations were unrealistic. And actually, I had some wounding in my heart around rejection and needing that sort of validation from him. So some of the time, our expectations are actually unhealthy, and we need to get some counselling and some help to get those healed up, because we're actually needing things from people that they can't possibly give us. We need to think about how important the relationship is and whether we need a boundary or we need some help to work out how to stay connected if it is a really important relationship. And then we need to think about how we manage and respond to them in the middle of that. And one of the things I've found as a follower of Jesus is that I have found that I've had to go to God. So I've put 5 up there as where I've gone to get my needs met, because God is a source of unconditional love. Human love is linked with, you know, often linked with behaviour. I'll love you if you do X, Y, Z. But When Jesus came, he showed us God's love. That's not linked with our behaviour, but it's actually linked with the Father's heart towards us, which is to love us even when we don't deserve it. So, thanks, Zach. There we go. It's over. Actually, we'll stop there. We'll give you a little break, a chocolate break. You're doing well? You're doing okay? The obvious other thing is when people haven't met our expectation is we get to practice this thing here, which is forgiveness, because the alternative isn't much fun. I think it's Philip Yancey, is it, who says the only thing harder than forgiveness is unforgiveness, which is pretty true, really.
So, Chris, I was talking about how all relationships are disappointing. No, not mine. Catherine's perfect. I've not yet found anything about her that's not perfect. So I might come across something at some point, but not yet. Chris was sharing about how all relationships are disappointing. The fact is that people are going to disappoint us and we are going to disappoint people. People can be, and sometimes it's even like healthy to disappoint people because they've created unhealthy expectations that we can't possibly fulfill, or our boundaries, which we'll talk about next week, are keeping us safe, but are causing them to feel disappointed. So deep connections are inherently risky because opening ourselves up to experiencing love requires opening ourselves up to the possibility of being hurt. When we are open to experiencing love, we're open to being affected by other people, which means we can get hurt. And when we do, we get the opportunity to forgive. So here is my definition of forgiveness. It's a bit meaty. So you don't need to like fully retain it. We do have some copies of our slides, which you are welcome to grab one of if you want. That might be helpful if that's a helpful thing for you. So here's my definition. Forgiveness is an individual, voluntary, internal process of letting go of feelings and thoughts of resentment, bitterness, anger, and the need for vengeance and retribution towards someone who we believe has wronged us, including ourselves. So forgiveness is actually really key to emotional health. It's also been linked to physical health. A lot of issues of emotional health kind of boil down to unforgiveness, or unforgiveness is at the root of it. Because unforgiveness, holding on to hurt, pain, wounds, a sense of bitterness, anger, or resentment, it can feel really powerful. It can actually feel more powerful than forgiving. Can feel more powerful than letting it go. Like justice demands that we maintain this red hot anger, this bitterness at this other person. But the truth is, unforgiveness actually hurts us more than it does the other person. Quite often, the other person may not even know that we are harboring bitterness towards them. And as long as we are holding on to unforgiveness, we're actually still being affected and impacted by the person who hurt us. We're actually holding open a line of connection that is keeping us a victim of their actions as long as we're holding on to unforgiveness. Forgiveness creates an opportunity to create a new normal. In all relationships that are growing, where we are a people that are growing, we are constantly creating new normals. As we grow, as we deepen, we get to create new normals. This I statement of when you, I feel, and I need to feel, so can we, this is about creating a new normal. It's an invitation to a new normal. When you don't help me wash the dishes, I feel disconnected and I need to feel connected. So can we work on that? It creates an opportunity to create a new normal. And forgiveness is the same. It gives us an opportunity to create a new normal. That said, forgiveness is not condoning, excusing an offense, or forgetting about it. And it's not the same as reconciliation. It does not always require reconciliation. There's actually some situations where reconciliation is not the healthy or appropriate action. Forgiveness does not guarantee access or trust, because where there's abuse or any form of harm, reconciliation and access is not the best course necessarily. So studies have found that there's many benefits to forgiveness, and I'm not going to read all these to you guys. You can take a look at them for a second. But what they really boil down to is that forgiveness increases physical and mental health and life satisfaction. This is what psychological studies have found about forgiveness. It's most often a process as well. It's not a one-time event. It's a decision made internally and regularly. I work as a counselor as well as the work I do here, and I find that forgiveness is the topic that I work with clients on the most regularly out of everything. And that's because unforgiveness contributes to so many issues like anxiety, addictions, bitterness, disconnection, feeling emotionally numb, and many other things. And as I work with clients, I've seen that often as we forgive, we discover more of how we were actually impacted. Like we forgive this one layer and we discover, oh, actually I was also hurt by this, or like we notice other people were involved in this situation in a way that also caused hurt. And so we get to have these layers of forgiveness where we forgive and we forgive and we forgive, and we become increasingly free as we uncover and deal with each layer. It's a forgiveness onion, if you will. So here's a quick outline of a way that you can engage with the process of forgiveness. The first is to uncover your anger or hurt by exploring how you've avoided or addressed the emotion, acknowledging the emotions. So in order to forgive, we actually need to acknowledge the feelings, acknowledge the pain, acknowledge the anger. We can't just ignore that and go straight to forgiveness. That's trying to bypass our emotions, and that doesn't work. The second is to make the decision to forgive. Make that intentional, internal decision to forgive. Begin by acknowledging that ignoring or coping with the offense hasn't worked, and therefore forgiveness might provide a path forward. Thirdly, cultivate forgiveness by developing compassion for the offender. This can be a time where you reflect on whether the act was due to malicious intent or circumstances in the offender's life. It is really rare for people to be outright malicious. It's way more often that people are acting out of brokenness.